And hello, everybody, and welcome to an all-new episode of All Things Trek. I'm your host, Grace. This week, I am your only host, along with here with, you know, our ever-faithful friend, David. Say hi, David.
Kapla. Yep, I'm good to go.
Fantastic. This week, I'm afraid we're not going to be having Oren with us for this week or the next 2 weeks. He is away on a retreat of some kind. Is that right, David?
I think we'll go with that.
Yeah, we'll use that as our excuse for now. I mean, it's not like he was abducted by any covert government agency or anything. That'd be silly, right? Yeah, that'd be ridiculous.
I hope he enjoys the Cardassian eggs.
Well, I'm sure when he comes back, he'll be able to tell us just how many lights there are with no, you know, coercive behavior or anything. Absolutely. I am totally confident in this fact. Well, anywho, welcome to the show. This is my first time hosting, you know, as host, so please bear with me. I'll do my best. So this week, we've got the festive holiday season upon us. We just finished Hanukkah, for those of you who are of the Jewish persuasion. But this week, we've got Christmas. And one of the things that I know I always think of when it comes to Christmas time is the festive music of Bing Crosby. But being a Trekkie, I'm more inclined to actually talk about Denise Crosby. Which brings us to our topic this week, a very Denise Crosby Christmas. Woo! Yay! Ooh. So let's start ourselves...
I hope it doesn't end with the black tar part.
Well, I'm not sure how that would work over radio, but... if a black tar pit comes, we know how to deal with it, I think.
Yep.
Through festive holiday cheer. Am I right? Am I right? Am I right?
And so, maybe a little mistletoe.
Emphasis on the mistle, yes. So anyway, starting off with Denise Crosby. We know her in Star Trek as the characters Tasha Yar and the Romulan, now Empress Sela, who is the daughter of, you know, alternate universe Tasha Yar, who got sent back through time with Enterprise C in the episode... ooh, what was the episode again, David?
Yesterday's Enterprise.
Yes, that's the one. One of my personal favorite episodes, and also pretty much the best Denise Crosby episode, in my opinion. Now, Denise Crosby, in case you saw our graphic, is also the granddaughter of singer Bing Crosby, as we said earlier. But she's also known for her work in... I'm sorry, I'm getting tongue-tied here. She's had a long line of work, including the movie Pet Sematary, a cameo in the Quentin Tarantino movie Jackie Brown, and right now she's got a series going on Showtime, I think, which I wrote down. I'm not very prepared today, I'm sorry. She's got a long career, she's had many roles, and now she has recently joined us as one of the main villains on Star Trek Online as Romulan Empress Sela. In the Romulan expansion pack, Legacy of Romulus. And I gotta tell you, I've been playing through it, and it's pretty dang fun. David, you've been playing with Star Trek Online for a while now. Have you played through Legacy of Romulus at all?
I've played some of it. I mean, my time to play is erratic at times, but I have tried to go through as much of the Denise Crosby content as I can. And before that, she did... kind of leading up to that, she did reprise her role as Tasha Yar in Star Trek Online in a featured episode. Like, so that was cool.
It sounds like that was kind of an incentive for her to get involved with Star Trek Online. She wanted to do something with Tasha again, which is pretty cool, again, I gotta say.
And the way they worked it in was pretty cool, because every anniversary for Star Trek Online, they release a new ship, and the first, you know, I think it was the second one, they did the brand new, like, what would be the Enterprise F, the Odyssey class starship, and then for the anniversary after that, a lot of people wanted the Ambassador class starship, which was the Enterprise C that went back in time in yesterday's Enterprise. So when they introduced the Ambassador class into the game, they continued or, you know, played off of the storyline of yesterday's Enterprise. And so we got to have Tasha Yar in the game for the first time, but also voiced by Denise Crosby. And it involved the yesterday's Enterprise storyline. So it didn't undo it. It didn't, you know, really conflict with it or undo what was in the episode.
Yeah, it just kind of riffed on it, didn't it?
Yeah, it added to it. So it another layer. So that was cool. And then we get, you know, the awesomeness of Empress Sela.
Who is such a great villain, isn't she? And she's also pretty much the voice for the Romulans. If you level up in the Romulus expansion pack, then you pretty much get her voice saying, congratulations, when you reach a new level, which is always neat. Especially because in the Federation one, you get Leonard Nimoy saying, congratulations, Captain. So it's kind of cool that she gets to be the Romulan equivalent of Leonard Nimoy, I guess.
Yep,
it's got to be a feather in your cap, right? So let's start off with talking about some of the Denise Crosby-centric episodes. Unfortunately, her character, when she was alive, didn't get a lot to work with. Like Crosby herself said, she had to die to get some really good episodes, which is kind of a shame. So let's start out with the first episode where her character really gets to strut her stuff, you know, combat-wise, and Code of Honor. Do you remember that episode, David?
Yeah, I think, isn't that the spiked gloves episode?
Yeah, they get the weird spiked boxing gloves to fight, to do foxy boxing for honor. Man, that episode is just a little distractingly racist, I gotta say. Especially because they go out of their way to have all of the aliens be African-American actors. They all have, like, the weird turbans and harem pants thing going on, and there's a point where they even have Picard say, yes, it seems like your culture is very similar to a long past culture of Earth who we respect very much. But they aren't willing to say which culture, so it's just kind of the ambiguous African Middle Eastern mashup culture. I mean, it felt like that was kind of a way of them trying to ethically cover their tracks in a really, really shallow way. And that kind of distracted me at the beginning. And then, of course, the leader of these guys falls instantly for Tasha Yar, seeing that she's a badass and what have you. Like you do when Tasha Yar is involved. You either have her, you know, look pretty or be tough, and she gets to do both in this episode. And I gotta say, Denise Crosby, for what she's given in this episode, I feel like really makes it work. You see a level of vulnerability in her performance, but you also, you get to see her be, like I said, a badass. You get to see her doing Aikido on the holodeck. You get to see her defending herself. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it is season one, so all the episodes in season one kind of have issues, and the characters were still kind of finding their footing. But aside from how aspects of that episode are, you know, badly written or just bad choices to go with, like the you know, the cult, the way the culture is represented, I did kind of still appreciate the episode, and especially because Tasha does get, you know, front and center. It focuses on her, and then I liked her range in that episode. It wasn't just like a flat performance. It wasn't like a one note, you know. It was a good episode for her, for Denise, and for Tasha to, you know, emote and to go through different things. And then seeing the fight, you know, that had some tension if you go with it, and because, you know,
as
death was on the line.
You can get when you're doing a weird foxy boxy thing, jumping around like on a jungle gym on a raised platform.
Yeah.
It's weird space foxy boxing. That's what it felt like, especially with the LeMay jumpsuit that the other woman is wearing.
And it's foxy boxing to the death. So yeah.
Da da. Yeah, I gotta say that while it does have some really distracting parts to it, like I said, foxy boxing, racism that they're trying to backtrack over, I really do like some of what we get to see from Tasha in this episode. I think a lot of her character comes through, and I think my favorite part of it is there's this point where she's been having to debate with Picard and Troi and talk about all of the political ramifications of what could happen and how they really need her to just kind of go with this guy in order to get this vaccine that their planet has, and she's just kind of got her head spinning. And Troi, for some reason, is trying to get her to admit that she kind of is attracted to the guy, which seems like a really insensitive thing to do, especially in front of your boss, because that's not really something you want to talk about in front of someone who, you know, you want to have a level of respect from. And later on in the show, in the next episode that we're talking about, Skin of Evil, she says that she always saw Picard as kind of a father figure. And when you think about it, that's just embarrassing. That's like having to admit to your dad who you have a crush on. Kind of icky, right?
Yeah, not, not cool, Troy.
Troy, I thought you were supposed to be the empathetic one. God.
And even if she did, like, in a way, like you said, it almost was like her going, huh, you kind of like him, right? Huh?
Yeah, we're having girl talk right now. We're bonding over me embarrassing you, right?
And if Tasha did have some level of attraction or, you know, interest or whatever, it's like, don't reveal it, you know, that's supposed to
be respect your privacy, man.
Bad counselor.
But my favorite part of the episode comes after that, when they're finally talking, like, okay, so you're going to have to duel this woman who's challenged you for the rights to her husband. Which is sad in and of itself that, you know, she feels like she has to earn her husband's affection and what have you. But that's a whole nother kettle of fish. But they give her the spiky boxing glove, which is really fun. And it's kind of one of those ultimate crazy sci-fi looking weapons. And it's so campy looking and funny. And the needles are, like, dipped in poison, so they're poison spiked boxing gloves with a knife on the end, and it's pretty much the entire kitchen sink as far as, you know, sci-fi weapons go. But there's this great point where she finally lifts it up, puts it on her fist, kind of flexes it on, goes, this is what I understand. Kind of like Tasha is struggling with the whole emotional aspect of this, with the internal politics of it all, but she knows how to fight, and that's a thing that she knows she can do and is confident in. And I'm pretty sure there's even a point where she says, if I fight his wife, I'm going to take her down, and I really could kill her. I don't want to kill her, but I could. And I feel like that speaks to the character a lot.
She was all in for that. I mean, that's definitely like upholding the honor of the ship, but also, you know, not, she wasn't back down, even at whatever weird scenario is around this fight. Once she's faced with a fight, she's not going to, you know, go half-hearted. She's not going to pull punches. She's going to, you know, go full-on with it.
She's bullheaded, but in a level-headed way, which is part of the appeal of the character, isn't it? And it's also part of what makes it sad that we didn't get to see more of the character, which brings us to our next episode, which sadly is kind of the only other really close to Tasha-centric episode we get in the first season, which is Skin of Evil. Yay. The one with the weird tar monster. For those of you who don't remember or have repressed it from your memories, it's the one where Tasha dies. And it comes kind of out of nowhere in the episode. Well, it feels like it should, but the only thing we have really leading up to that is this great dialogue between her and Worf talking about how she's entered in this fighting competition, and Worf kind of lets it slip that he's bet on her. And they have this great interaction of her being like, wow, Worf, you've got confidence in me. He's like, well, of course I do. You're awesome. And it's this very, very tender moment between the two of them. As tender as you get with a pair of tough guys, you know, talking shop. And I read somewhere that Denise Crosby later said that if she'd had more scenes like that, she probably would have stuck around. Which really makes watching that scene kind of a shame, because you can't help but wonder what might have been.
Yeah, I really did like that interplay between her and Worf, and that you know, the way that particular scene went. But I also liked the idea of that, you know, so Picard would be kind of like a father figure. Some of the other people might feel like, you know, peers or equals, but in a way she's feeling like she's, you know, the protector, the security of the ship, so she may feel like some of the other officers are, like, under her watch or she has to protect. And then here's Worf, where...
Well, you're a security chief, of course, so...
Right. Well, you know what I mean? It's like, not like a mother in their hen, but, like, you know, somebody that you look at as, I need to protect, like...
Not a
little,
mother hen, but a mama bear, more like...
Yeah, but then you have with Worf, it kind of, there's a different dynamic where they're both tough, and I kind of felt like it had potential that they would both, you know, be strong, like in a way be strong together, but also it would be with those two that they both could reveal some vulnerability that they wouldn't reveal to other parts of the crew, you know,
because... Right, because they're bonding over their mutual tough guyness, and that brings out a softer side in both of them. And I always really liked the interactions that we got to see between Tasha, Yar, and Worf, because they had that going on, and they had this great repartee kind of going of them both being the tough guy and having equal footing in that sense. But of course, we don't really get to see that go anywhere, because suddenly in the episode, Tasha dies. And what kind of makes it a shame is that it really is kind of a punk out death. She gets attacked by a slime monster and he like shocks her or something. It doesn't really make any sense. She comes at him and then suddenly she's flying through the air and then dead. And I'm never entirely sure what happened there.
Yeah, I didn't like the way that played out. Like, especially in retrospect, looking back at, you know, the history or just the overall arc of TNG and then how that character was treated. But even the first time, like when I was watching it for the first time, for one, I kind of felt like it was going back to the original series where, like, he's dead, Jim, and then in the same episode, they find a way to undo it or bring them back or revive them. I thought, that's right. not going to stick.
That's what you kind of expect if you've got the sense of familiarity with Star Trek, because this character, who we haven't seen much of her, but we have come to respect her, like I said earlier, but she gets kind of this red shirt death, and that's really unsatisfying. And especially in an episode that it feels like should be more focused on the death of someone who was one of the main characters. She was one of the bridge crew, but we see her die. The rest of the episode happens. They mention every now and then Tasha's dead. And then that's it. And we get pretty much her eulogy for herself at the end, and that's it. And it's really unsatisfying. Although, I will say for the eulogy scene, that's another part that makes me sad, because we get to see this character who's, you know, made it very clear that she's all about this sort of tough guy-ness that she's got, that she's protected herself with. She's come from a very harsh background, but this is her trying to say, well, if you're watching this, I'm dead, and I'm sorry that I couldn't do more to stay alive, but it's what I expected, really. And we get to see her have these sort of mini interactions with each member of the crew who she's gotten close to. And what really saddened me is in that part, we get to see with each of her addressing each of the crew, we get to see a little touch of what could have been. And that's what makes it very sad, that there is so much potential that we see just in that one scene, like her talking to Worf as an equal, her talking to Picard about how he was her father figure, her talking to Wesley about how she was looking forward to seeing what kind of person he'd grow up to become. And that's what just kind of makes the episode heartbreaking for me. Red shirt death and all, that's the part that gets to me.
Yeah, and even aside from how it plays out in the particular episode, like, you know, which obviously we don't like how it was kind of too quick, too meaningless, and, you know, that, but in that episode, but even overall, I remember a lot of people, or I don't know about a lot, but I know a couple people that I, you know, were Trekkies and friends with at the time, didn't really like Yar, and I didn't have in the early days, I didn't have a super love for her, but I didn't have any ill will or, you know, feeling against her, and so I kind of was confused by that, but, because the whole time I kept thinking, this character has potential. Like, I want to see where this character goes.
He has as much potential as the rest of the crew, and that's what made it sad.
Well, it was season one.
She was a character that got away.
But obviously they all had potential, and they were all developing the characters. It was still season one, but I thought because of the story, like, because her particular character, her life story, and what she went through to get to where she is, it seemed more interesting to me than just like, yep, I decided to go to the academy, I graduated the academy, now I'm an officer. Like, there's still character to do with that, you know, personality and character, but her whole story, the interactions, because there was times where she was just full-on security chief, security warrior, basically. And then we saw glimpses of other times where she would drop that guard and, you know, let her vulnerable side come out or just be, you know, friendly with. And so I thought, this is a character that could really have layers and have different levels of interaction and not just be, you know, the one character that you like, but they're always pretty much the same, demeanor, the same, you know. Wasted potential is basically what is sad and frustrating about it.
And yeah, again, that's what makes it really sad, the fact that Tasha did have to die to get, you know, for the character development, which is especially sad considering they gave her a very interesting background that we, well, at least me as an audience, really wanted to see more explored. she was just written as such a good starting off point, at least as good as any of the other bridge crew. And that's what makes her a shame. And again, the shame is she had to die to get a really good episode, which brings us to yesterday's Enterprise, which I gotta say is one of my very favorite episodes in the entire run of Next Generation. For those of you who don't remember, the Enterprise has a run-in with a black hole or some kind of Deus Ex Machina space storm, like they do, and they end up in an we end up seeing an alternate timeline where the Federation has been at war with the Klingons for the past 20 years, and they run into the Enterprise from 20 years ago that was just in the middle of a very pivotal battle with the Klingons that really could have changed the outcome of whether they went to war with them or not. And so we've got these two Enterprises interacting. But in this timeline, Tasha is still alive. And we see her interacting with the security officer on the other Enterprise. And it's such a good episode. I don't really know what else to say besides that. The fact that Tasha is kind of one of the main interactions we see. Her interacting with this other security officer from the other bridge. It's just a really good episode for Tasha because we see her... We're used to seeing her in what we did see of her in this timeline we're used to is her being someone who's sort of put up this warlike, prickly exterior, and that makes her sort of have trouble with other people. But in this line, when they are at war and the Enterprise is a full-on warship, she's kind of in her element, and that means we get to see her being someone who is in their element, but at the same time is trying to kind of reach out to someone in her own way to find that kind of tenderness. And it kind of echoes what we saw with her talking with Worf and being like, yeah, we're both the tough guys. I respect you for that. But we get to see her do that in a way that's kind of a little more romantic with this other guy. His name was Castile, I think.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting episode because not only do we get to see what could have been for her character, but we also get to see the entire sort of ship in a more warlike setting. And one of the things I really like about this episode, aside from what we see with Tasha, is what we see between Picard and Guinan. Because Guinan, being all-wise space alien woman, is the only one who's like, hang on, this isn't quite... weren't we like some kind of big, crazy space cruise ship kind of thing? Weren't there kids running around here? This isn't right. And Picard just kind of not wanting to have any of that and being like, what, you want me to not agreeing with her, just kind of wanting him to take her word on it. And honestly, I just love the interactions between Guinan and Picard in general. But then we get on a third tier here, we get these great sort of interactions between Guinan and Tasha, because we never really got to see them interact when Tasha was alive. And I'm kind of a sucker for Guinan as a character. I kind of love that old Western trope of the all-knowing bartender who's dispensing the advice and knows more than everyone else. And to see her as a character interact with Tasha, and I feel like the scenes that they get together really do credit to both Whoopi Goldberg and Denise Crosby's acting chops. It really does, just the two of them kind of trying to interact and having this wariness about them is... I just love when good actor chemistry comes together like that. It really... it brings it all together. And, of course, it's one of the really harder-to-watch endings of an episode for me because we see her, Tasha, I mean, agree to go back with the Enterprise C into the big battle that they have with the Klingons, knowing that they're probably going to die, but Tasha knowing that if she goes back with them, she'll be doing something important, and she'll get to stand by the people she's become very close to. But again, it's a really hard to watch episode if you know what becomes of that. The fact that she goes into battle with such optimism and such excitement, and she pretty much asks to be put into battle. She asks Picard to let her trade over to them to do what she can. And if you know what happens with Sela in all that later on, it's really uncomfortable to watch, at least for me.
And that speech where she's basically saying, like, I want to send me back, I want to go back, like, send me with the sea to the Klingon basically, you know, going into a hopeless battle. Aside from
a hopeless battle that makes a difference and they think will stop the war. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so it's for a good, and that's the point, is she's saying it's cringing because it kind of in a way references the skin of evil, because she's saying, like, I don't want to have an empty death. I want my death to mean something. And
right,
by going
and her death
back,
in Skin of Evil is a pretty empty red shirt death. So
exactly. So I think that was a good fix. Like, they redeemed it, because if it just
we gave
left,
her a better death. Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's really sad to see, because she is willing to sort of throw herself into this battle. And we kind of see at the end of Skin of Evil, when she's giving her eulogy, where she's talking about how to say, she's saying, I hope I died a good death, because I'm probably going to die in the line of work. The fact that Tasha has come to kind of see herself as dispensable, and that's so hard to see, especially with a character that you, well, at least like I do, have a level of respect for, to see yourself as being like, yeah, I'm another security officer. I kind of knew it would always come to this. I didn't expect that much. It's kind of very sad, personally.
Yeah. Well, and at the same time, if you could almost hear a similar note coming from a firefighter or a police officer saying, like, I know that
definitely, and that's what makes it so sad.
Right, that they know they're going to go in the line of duty, you know, but also serving and helping, you know, to do their job, their role. And so it's not like, you know, even in that case, it would definitely, I don't think it would be an empty death. Like, if it's a security officer or a firefighter that, you know, runs towards the danger when others run away type of thing, and they meet their end, you know, that to me still is, you know, a meaningful thing. So that's why it just made the Skin of Evil thing that much worse. But I do like how they gave the new level to it with yesterday's Enterprise. But like you said, later on, when they add the Sela aspect, it just adds more to the yesterday's Enterprise. So it's just like layers upon layers. And, you know, in a way, I also think that's good sci-fi, that, you know, there's so many different things going on. Branches off, and yeah.
So while we're on that note, let's move into talking about the redemption story arc, where we first see Sela. The story is based around the Enterprise going into Klingon space to appoint Gowron as Chancellor. Is that right? I can never understand Klingon politics. As racist as that sounds, I can't. And there's a lot of dabbling going on with the Romulans working with the Duras sisters, trying to put sort of their own puppet leader on the High Council. And the whole time they're suspecting Romulans are behind this. Romulans are probably behind this. And then, yeah, Romulans are behind it. Not just any Romulan, though. It's Sela. Enterprise C version's version Tasha Yar's daughter with a Romulan who, it turns out, she was captured by, when she did not, in fact, die the honorable death she was planning on in the battle with Enterprise-D. And that's what kind of makes the ending to yesterday's Enterprise so bitter, knowing that she was willing to die this glorious battle-filled death, and she ends up being taken as a consort and pretty much enslaved to be the wife of this Romulan guy. And that just makes knowing what happens in hindsight when you watch yesterday's Enterprise, that gives it such a bitter level. And it adds almost this level of Shakespearean tragedy to Tasha's death. Well, to Tasha's character in general. Well, but sadly, you see more of that with Tasha of yesterday's Enterprise than you do of straight-up regular Enterprise Tasha's character. And that's kind of what makes the whole thing a little convoluted, isn't it?
Yeah. And the whole level of it, of like, okay, she went to go off to die in this hopeless battle for a good cause that would have good, you know, outcomes, but then that's taken away, or like that's diverted into this other storyline. And then it makes it worse, because it's not like, okay, well, she fell in love with the Florence Nightingale, but instead of with the medical thing, it's like,
she falls for Castile, and then she ends up being the kept woman of a Romulan officer.
Right, and that makes it worse because she's not. She didn't fall in love with the Romulan officer.
Oh, sorry, Castillo. I've been saying his name wrong.
Castillo, yeah, something like that.
I got to say, though, a quick thing about Castillo, though. I really loved seeing that actor who's kind of known for doing the slimy bad guy thing. It was really cool to see him playing a likable character and to try and be a nice guy. It was a nice change, and I think he does it really well, also. I'm mostly saying this because in my brain, he will forever be the antagonist in everything I've ever seen him in. And seeing this change is just it's a nice surprise also that comes from the episode in all of the other unexpected things that come from it. But anyway, moving back to Redemption and what happens to Tasha. And this is where we get to really see, again, some more of Denise Crosby's diversity, moving in from this very honorable character that we got with Tasha to this really unscrupulous kind of Machiavellian character that we get with Sela. And it's spooky, really. It's really spooky. Kind of seeing someone who embodies a lot of what Tasha at least felt like she was against. She was more for like the straight on fight and all that. And Sela's like, no, I'm going to just pull some strings here, see if I can get other people to do the fighting for me. And it's the fact that she looks exactly like Tasha, you know, being Denise Crosby and all like you do, makes that even more of a just kind of, ugh. It makes it feel like a visual betrayal, almost. And again, I feel like that really adds to this sort of tragic aspect of the whole thing. The whole arc that we get with Tasha after yesterday's Enterprise and with Redemption, it feels so, like I said, it feels very Greek tragedy. It almost echoes the Trojan Women, if you're familiar with that, which I reference constantly because... If you haven't looked into it, look into it. It says a lot about war, and I feel like it says a lot about... this is me getting on my soapbox! It says a lot about how we perceive war and the damages of war, and it's a very universal story. Yeah, I'll get off that soapbox. David, take it away from me.
Well, and I do agree, and It was weird when I watched Redemption and saw that for the first time, because and just seeing Sela for the first time and her development, because at the same time I was liking that she was back, that Denise was back and given good roles, good stuff to do.
It was a familiar face.
But then at the same time, it's Sela and she's being, you know, Romulan and being creepy and going, and the scene with Sela and Picard just was like, you know, dripping with, you know, awesome, but then creepy and just weird. But, you know, when she's telling the story about how Tasha, alternate Tasha, tried to escape. And, you know, Sela was like, but this is my home. It was just, I think, some of the best parts of Star Trek, where it's maybe not a fan favorite moment for a lot of people, but it's just very, you know, good sci-fi, good Trek.
Yeah, No matter how uncomfortable the sort of ending that we get with Enterprise C, Tasha Yar, you cannot deny that it is a gut-churning moment when we find out what happened to her. And of all things, to hear it coming from her daughter, who she was trying to save, just makes it even more... I'm talking with too many sound effects here, aren't I? But honestly, that's what I got from it. I audibly just kind of went, when I first saw it.
Yeah, well, because there are times in Trek and in sci-fi and just, you know, film and stories in general where a character is basically a bad guy or basically, you know, on the other side. And you could still like them, you know, in a way some people get with that with Gul Dukat or, you know, just different characters. And when they were first bringing Sela in, I kind of thought, okay, so she's a Romulan. She's obviously not going to, you know, be joining the Enterprise team because she's a Romulan doing that thing. But I kind of thought, are they going to set it up to where we kind of are liking this character, sympathetic to them? Are they going to kind of, you know, be uneasy allies or anything? And that basically got thrown out the window, and you know that, like, no, she's not going to help the Enterprise. She's not going to be the next, you know, the next coming of Tasha Yar. It's like, nope, she's got her own agenda. She's doing, you know, going against the Enterprise team crew, and you know, even within the Klingon realm, you know, doing the underhanded, you know, manipulations and everything. It was just like, you're basically not really... obviously, we love Denise and the character, but, like, in the story itself, you're not going to be like, yay, Sela. You know, it was just a like, again, a lot layers.
You're
going
to be like, oh, crap, Sela.
Right.
I think Sela also serves as a really good reminder of the range of villainy that we get through Star Trek. We get some very likable bad guys, like the kind of bad guys who you're like, oh, they're back. What are they going to do? Like likable villains, not in the sense that we like want to be friends with them or anything, just that we enjoy seeing them and we enjoy seeing like the mischief they get up to. But with Sela, again, it's just kind of, you get that uh-oh feeling when you see her. but unfortunately, we don't see a lot more of her on the series, do we?
No, I think they could have used her again more often. And that's where I think, in a way, they could have done more with the Romulan people storyline in general. I mean, we get a lot of different, we get a lot of good Klingon stuff. So obviously, I enjoy that. We start getting some of the Cardassian, but I thought, you know, Romulans were basic before the Borg, and you know that whole thing took over. In a way, the Romulans were kind of going to be the big enemy, the big bad against the Federation, and I thought we were going to see more of that, and then we kind of only get sprinklings of it, you know, throughout the series. So I was hoping to see more of Sela, you know, even after the episodes that we got,
which is part of the excitement of the new expansion to Star Trek Online. We're not only getting to see more of Sela, we're getting to see more of Romulan society in general, which is very exciting, but we'll get to that later. Let's talk about the final episode that we see Sela in, Reunification Part 2, is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Which, unfortunately, she doesn't really do that much. There's not much plotting, and then she gets taken out by Data. Which, while a little, is also kind of interesting to see when you think about the relationship that Data had with Tasha. And then to see him kind of take down this sort of personification of the reversal of her beliefs. That makes it kind of interesting in a kind of poetic way, albeit a very convoluted poetic way.
Well, and that kind of goes back to the whole thing with Sela. Like, if it was just a different Romulan doing the same things that she did, it'd be like, okay, you know, dastardly deeds by the Romulan twirling their mustache type of villainy, whatever. But when it's Sela, aside from the fact that she looks just like, you know, Yar because it's Denise, but even if they had chosen a different actress for the Sela and like saying, I'm the daughter of Yar, that kind of makes it too close to home, you know, like that makes that, it adds that level to it. So I could almost see for Data, aside from, you know, the position.
Yeah, Data is no stranger to creepy uncanniness, is he?
Exactly. But, you know, that's, she, Sela, like being the instrument or the cause of Tasha's, you know, untimely, you know, very
undoing.
And it's such a, you know, not, obviously, it wasn't in battle, like doing an honorable thing. It was, so I could see where Data, you know, would have a couple different layers also of like wanting to, you know, take her down and, have her almost in a way come to justice before, you know, what happened with Yar. But so it was definitely an interesting character. I'm glad they did Sela, you know, they created and thought of the character and what they did with it. I was hoping to see more of her though. Sela.
Definitely. But let's take a break from Sela and go back to Tasha and talk about her relationship with Data, because that's always something that, when you bring it up, you get interesting reactions from. Whenever I talk to someone about it, I either get the, oh, that's just kind of creepy thing because Data's kind of got this childlike mind, or the, that was really interesting. It was really cool seeing how they interacted because she was so tough and he was so sensitive. And you get a lot of responses to, forgive me for saying, for a pairing like that, you know? So yeah, what's your thought on their relationship, David?
A lot of times I try to, like, there's the retrospect of, like, all the years later and the multiple viewings, but I also try to think back of how I first initially reacted when I was watching the episodes on their first run. basically, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was, fun for the characters, for the show. But then when I go into the story of it, I didn't have a problem with it. You know, they're all dealing with what's going on. And I thought it kind of made sense. It didn't make me feel like, you know, this is just totally, you know, illogical or out of left field or, you know, doesn't seem right or all that. Because who would she, if she was in her mode, you know, in that mindset, in a way, who would she have really connected to or bonded with or, you know, went to go visit? I don't see her doing that with Riker, you know, going to Riker. There's, you know, in a way, limited options for the, you know, the principal cast, but even in general, I kind of did see, okay, I could, that would be interesting for both characters. And for Data, I didn't really look at him as childlike. I mean, like, you know, as a, obviously he's in a, not as developed as he becomes later, but I kind of just thought of him as, I guess, more of like a younger person. You could almost look at like, you know, a teen or a 20 something. So I didn't feel like it was, you know, crossing a line of, oh, he's a child, you know, that's wrong. But
don't touch the android.
You know, his character, his, you know, he was not threatening, so she didn't have to, you know, be vulnerable to him. He wasn't something where she would feel like I need to dominate him, you know, like, so he's so meek and you know, vulnerable of himself. So I thought it was an interesting, connection or pairing. And, you know, it was, I didn't have any issues with it. And I think it added to both characters, you know, even though they were in their, you know, drunken state or whatever you want to call that. It added more to Data's experience and, you know, connecting with a crew member in a way that he hadn't before. And so obviously you get the tongue-in-cheek answers like, oh, you know, sex toy or whatever type of comments.
Fully functional, ladies.
Right. So I went with it. I was cool with it. And it was, you know, I'm good.
One response I've actually heard, and someone's bringing it up in the chat room right now. I would say their name, but it looks like a letter matching, so sorry. But they pointed out that there are people who think that the whole relationship with Data was just added because they were worried that Tasha was not feminine enough and that putting her in a relationship with a male crew member was just a way to sort of de-butchify her, which is kind of sad, but kind of a possibility when you think about it, because they were willing to cross a lot of boundaries with Star Trek, but having a lady who's just kind of full butch doesn't seem like something they were comfortable with just yet.
Yeah, I never really got that vibe from her. Obviously, like was said earlier in the chat, Tasha wasn't girly. She wasn't, you know, overly feminized. I don't know if that's a bad way to say that, but you know what I mean? She's a strong woman, and so I didn't see her as, oh, she's too butch or, she's too manly. Because I've heard other people say, oh, they didn't like Yar because that character should have been a man, the way it was, you know, written and portrayed, and she was too... And I'm like, no, I don't agree with that. I never saw that way. So I just saw her as like a, you know, strong woman, confident, and not every woman is going to be the girly girl. And, you know, I haven't heard people say that, like when talking about Yar, I haven't actually interacted or, you know, had people say that in the conversation. Now that I'm thinking about that, I'm like, I kind of don't agree with that.
Interesting food for thought, though. Originally, at one point when they were developing the show, they were discussing having the actress who played Vasquez in Aliens filling the role, who is a very butch woman, at least at the time. And
yeah,
well, that was part of the appeal of her character in Aliens also. And she gets accused of being too butch, her character in Aliens. So think about if people would have reacted differently with someone like that filling the role. Just a little food for thought for you again.
Fine. If a woman, you know, is in that mode or that model, it's like, fine, you know, there should be no issue with it. Just as the same on the flip side, if a man is, some people would call too, you know, effeminate, it's like, that shouldn't be an issue. That shouldn't be a problem. Man, you know, quote unquote, man shouldn't all be all one type or all one way, and the same with women.
Absolutely. David, you are just winning my heart over here, I gotta say. I've had many people say to me, though, why not just have had, like you were saying earlier, why not have just have had Tasha be a guy? If she's going to be the tough guy and she isn't going to be particularly feminine, why not just make it be a guy? And that's part of why I like the character of Tasha, is because she represents that a woman can be tough and a woman doesn't have to be feminine to be womanly. And again, there was a point in her eulogy where she addresses Counselor Troy and says, I want to thank you for showing me that I could be feminine and still be me, and that there was nothing wrong with being either. And again, that's just a sad moment, because that would have been really interesting, wouldn't it, to have seen Yar and Troy's relationship, sort of with their contrasting levels of traditionally feminine and traditionally masculine, how that contrasts and the way they interact. I would have really loved to see that, especially because apparently Denise Crosby and Marina Sirtis got, you know, really close filming that first season, and I felt like that would have done a credit to both of them as characters and both of them as actresses. And again, just another coulda, woulda, shoulda moment right there. But when it comes to Data and Tasha as a kind of couple, which they weren't really, they were kind of an in-show pairing, really. There was a will-they-won't-they level. The fact that they had hooked up meant that there was that sort of tie between the two of them. But I always felt like they were an interesting character contrast together, because I've half heard Denise Crosby say in interviews that part of what she liked about the character of Tasha is that she was kind of a contradictory character with this level of vulnerability and toughness, and seeing that as a contrast to Data, who's kind of outwardly vulnerable but really tough inside, whereas she's the opposite. It made them kind of a compatible, but that doesn't work quite right. It made them a contrast.
And that's why I thought it was an interesting, and it felt, you know, like that would have happened, that those two characters would, you know, connect to each other, to the other one, because of who, you know, their personalities, their functions, their roles. And so that was another thing where, you know, they're in this, you know, altered state. So that's what, you know, she's sauntering down the hall and then goes to Data. So they're kind of like not, quote unquote, like not themselves, or they're being influenced or affected or whatever. I kind of thought, okay, so that this happens, you know, and it gets mentioned later when Data is on trial, you know, is he a toaster or is he a sentient being? And he mentions
that he had developed emotional attachments to Tasha.
Right. They were intimate, but they had that connection or the bond. I kind of thought,
get little hints of that throughout the series also, like when they see that Data, when they think Data's dead, they're clearing out his stuff and they find his little hollow picture of her that he keeps in his desk.
Right, so I'm glad that got referenced later, you know, at least in these subtle ways. But
and it wasn't just a thing that was like, it happened, let's never speak of it again.
Right, like just a nothing one-night stand
Tasha
or something.
The way Tasha kind of, it seems, hoped it would be at the start.
Well, when I saw the episode, you know, in first run, I thought, okay, cool, this is something that, you know, they were influenced, they were drunk, or however you want to, you know, characterize that. But I thought,
under normal circumstances, neither of them would have done. Yeah.
Right. But since that, you know, since it happened, since they both went there, I thought that's good potential for them to connect and to bond and have a different level of interaction later in the show. Like, again, I thought good potential for story right there, because they're going to have not just that, oh, we are physical, because that's one thing, but that they, you know, did have a bond or a connection that wouldn't have been with the other crew. You know, Data wouldn't have had that so much with any of the other principal, you know, main cast, and she didn't. So I thought, you know, there was good potential for her and Worf to, you know, have their connection and their dynamic, and then for her and Data. And obviously Picard was going to be like a father figure mentor. So I thought this character is going to have so many good storylines later in the show. And then it just, you know, ends up that we don't either don't get it, or we only get small glimpses of what could have been.
And while it's pretty cool that continuing throughout the series, we get to see how Tasha affected Data, it would have been interesting to see how Data affected her, you know? To see, like, how spending time around him could have, you know, maybe helped her feel less vulnerable or anything like that, just because they are, again, such character contrasts. That would have been interesting to see. And yet again is another would have been nice kind of thing.
Another small, like, layer of that dynamic that I thought was interesting and a good pairing, even if it, you know, just for storytelling, was because in some of the episodes we see, and it could have been done differently or better at times, but we see that she kind of, even in the, Encounter at Farpoint, and then they bring her back for All Good Things, I think, but...
briefly they do.
So when she's dealing with Q, like when, you know, Q is saying, you know, you guys are a dangerous child race and you're, you know, no merit, basically, and she stands up to Q, there's been a few other times where, and I wouldn't characterize it this way, but I've heard other people say that she's like, you know, hot-headed and she'll like just burst out with her, you know, not rage, but like...
I could agree with that to a degree, yeah, she's got a temper.
So there's that element to it, at least, because I thought that'll probably, you know, be refined and she'll, you know, that'll change or evolve over the seasons. But then I thought, even in the first season, I thought that was interesting because here's her where she does have the passion and the, you know, the temper. It could just be because of her character, like her personality, but also tying into her past. And then you pair her up with the android who has no emotion. So I thought that's a kind of, you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So that was, you know, good storytelling that I thought was, you know, good potential, but even just in what the idea of it. I wish we could have done more of that.
Quick question. Were you watching Star Trek Next Generation when it first was on the air?
Yeah, I was. It was like appointment television.
Not to date you or anything here, not to make you seem old or anything.
No, I mean, I grew up watching the original series in reruns in the 70s, and then I also watched the animated series in the 70s, and so I grew up loving Star Trek, the original.
It sounds like you were expecting a lot from The Next Generation from the beginning, whereas a bunch of people were critically watching it and being like, oh, God, what is this?
Yeah. Well, I was skeptical. I mean, before it aired, it's like, you know, I loved Kirk and Spock, Star Trek. I was a diehard Trekkie basically from birth because my mom watched it. And so I was like a Trekkie in the womb, basically. So I loved Trek.
A prenatal Trekkie?
And so when they said, like, we're going to do a new Star Trek, here comes the Next Generation, I was like, yay. But like they better do it right, or you know, let's see, like show me what you got type of thing.
Whereas for me it was like the opposite. I didn't start watching Next Generation until a while after it was over, but I was able to like see from the beginning that it had been on for a long time. So when I started watching it chronologically, I was like, this better get better. Whereas you were a lot more optimistic just watching it, not knowing what would happen than I was.
Well,
I guess
they're
not all sunshine and rainbows as much as we thought.
There was the cringe factor of, you know, being just the fact that Picard was so different than Kirk, and you know, it's a different crew and a different. But I grew up also watching a lot of television, and you know, whether it was MASH or all these other series that go on for a long time.
Yeah, Couch Potatoes Unite.
It was knowing the fact that, you know, season one is going to be kind of not the worst necessarily, but the ground.
The first season
level.
Is never very good for most series.
Right.
Except
so
for
as
Heroes,
time
where
goes
it's
on.
The only good one.
Oh, yeah.
I said it.
So I knew, you know, because I love Star Trek, I'm like, I'm going to, you know, stick with it. I'm going to go with it. And even when they did things I didn't necessarily like in a particular episode, I had the Trek, you know, foundation of, okay, some of the TOS episodes ain't so great, but the overall series is cool. So I'm just going to stick with it and go with it. So yeah, it was something where I think it was for most of the run, it was like Sundays at 8. You know, I made sure I was home. And then when it was very, you know, vivid or impactful when I was like a brand new Star Trek episode. And so, you know, as time went on, I was hoping for more character development and knowing that this is, you know, just the ground floor, just the beginning. And so I was hoping to see more from, you know, Tasha over the series. And so it was just, you know, not the way I would have hoped for it to have gone. But we did get, you know, Sela and a lot of good story relating to Tasha.
So you came into it as an optimist. And I think we've gone on enough of a tangent that we can say it is now the top of the hour. And do you want to lead us through a quick music break, David?
Yep, we could do that.
Fantastic. And when we come back, we'll be discussing Denise Crosby's departure from the show, why it was, and why she did what she did, and the theories and controversy surrounding it therein.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go.
Make it so.
Make it so. Make it so. Ma'am,
it doesn't show signs
of stopping. And I brought me some tea, Earl Grey, hot. The
lights
are
turned
way down low.
Make it so.
Make it so.
Make it so.
When we finally kiss.
Good night.
How I hate going out in
the storm. But if you...
Really?
Shut up, Wesley!
All the way home, I'll be...
Warm. Oh, the fire is slowly dying. And my dear...
We're still goodbye, then. But
as long as
you love me so...
Make it so.
Make it so.
Make it so.
Everybody, thanks for joining us. If you're just joining us, we are discussing today the work of Denise Crosby and her work in Star Trek. She's a pretty cool lady if you're not familiar with her. But today we're going to discuss one of her more controversial aspects to her Star Trek career, the fact that she left, which to many fans that I've talked to has been seen as a major just slight to the franchise. Actually, one of the first times I remember even talking about Denise Crosby to someone, I think I was in middle school or something, and I had just started watching Star Trek Next Generation. I brought it up to one of my dad's older nerdy friends, and I mentioned Tasha Yar, and I was really excited because I was like, yeah, I think it's neat that they've got like a really tough lady. And his response to me was like, oh. And he said this to me in legitimately one of the coldest voices I have ever heard in my life. The one that left. It's amazing how seriously some people will take that. He was very personally offended by it.
But well, now, I guess you would have to like asterisk that by saying left and didn't come back because Gates McFadden also left, but then she came back.
Right? I don't know. This guy just had some very personal issues, I guess, with Star Trek and actors who make decisions to leave. What have you. But anyway, we've got a soundbite, and it's from 2013 Las Vegas Trek. Is that right, David?
Yeah, in the Star Trek Las Vegas convention was held in August of 2013, earlier this year, and it was she was doing a panel to promote the Legacy of Romulus expansion for Star Trek Online. So she was talking about the Next Generation, talking about Star Trek Online and her involvement with that, and the panel was from Cryptic Studios, featuring Al Rivera, the lead designer, Captain Gecko, and community manager, Brandon Brandflakes Felkser. So they're talking about a lot of good stuff, but obviously, you know, gamers asking about the game, but also Next Generation fans asking about her and, you know, Yar and all that. So, yeah, it was a good discussion.
Definitely worth a watch or a listen if you're a Denise Crosby fan or a fan of Star Trek Online.
Yep, and you could find the full thing we have it on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for Legacy of Romulus with Denise Crosby, STLV 2013. It's on the Trek Radio YouTube. But so you wanted to play this clip, and it's very interesting and pertinent to what we're talking about.
All right, let's go for it.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
I'm learning new things about the the game, so that's awesome. I know that you were involved in the gaming process. That's really great. I might check it out.
Thank you. Please do.
Yeah. My wife and I are watching Next Gen, so it's the Next Gen question I'm about to ask for the first time for her, because she hasn't really seen most of it. And watching it, that really liked your character in the first season. It was very raw. Everything was very raw, the characters, but you were a very strong character. And in a way, you almost reminded me of a female Riker. Kind of like, you're kind of very similar, but I like the female strength. My question is, if you were to go on the show and have your own casting decision, would you have played her differently than what was presented? And question two is, why did you leave the show?
They're kind of interconnected, those two questions. Tasha Yar was a dynamic, fabulous character. I adored her. I loved the challenge. I was always looking for vulnerabilities and the opposites in her. Here she's in this position of great strength and power in defense of the ship. Yet inside of her, she's a very fragile child that was from a horrible, horrible background, has lost her entire family or parents, but yet. What better than someone who was able to fight all of that adversity and rise to the top of her field? You know, that's that. So within that, it was a great complex character, and I especially always wanted to play her. I didn't want the perfect profession and the perfect person. You know, that isn't what life is. And I felt Star Trek was ready to have, you know, fragile and not perfect people. So.
And we're back. And just a brief glimpse at. And the full interview is 30 minutes, 31, 32 minutes long. So I definitely recommend everyone check it out. But just a glimpse into her thinking of that character.
All right, so we've got Denise Crosby's perspective on why she left and why she felt like that was justifiable. But like I said, to this day, we still get people kind of debating whether she was justified in leaving and whether what she was doing was unfair to viewers of the show or whether she was being selfish by wanting to do other things. Or there are also some pretty prevalent rumors that she was kicked off of the show for posing for Playboy. Which seems like a pretty silly thing to me to kick someone off a show for. I mean, you'd think that would add buzz, wouldn't you? Am I right?
Well, and, you know, it goes back to, you know, if you look at the similar scenarios where, you know, Nichelle Nichols had posed nude and other characters have, and they were brought back.
We had Kim Cattrall posing nude on the bridge at one point, didn't we?
Yeah, so I don't know if that would have been enough to, you know, be mad, so mad that you kick a person off a show for.
And this rumor has inconsistencies. But anyway,
go ahead.
So from the sound of it, she basically felt like she wasn't being given the full reign of what she would have liked to do with the character, and the character wasn't being given enough to do. David, do you feel like that would be, if you were in her position, is that something that you would just walk out over?
Well, I could understand it. I don't know if I would have made the same choice, but at the same time, she was there. It wasn't just about the character. There was behind the scenes issues that also related somewhat to why Gates McFadden left. But and what she left for was either, you know, fixed or lessened and resolved and somewhat after she left. So maybe her leaving, you know, sparked that change. So maybe, you know, in a way behind the scenes, it was not, I hate to say it, but maybe it was good she left because it, you know, made people realize or think about, well, we do need to make this change or, you know, other actors may show similar dissatisfaction with it. So I definitely could understand it. And there was, you know, a lot going on behind the scenes that I could see an actor not really wanting to continue. It, like a stressful work environment, but also just not the type of, you know, environment that you feel comfortable being in. And it wasn't just like, oh, I just want to go do movies. That wasn't the issue. It was a lot of like disagreement with how things were handled backstage and with the character, but also with some of the castings, the way the producers would deal with the cast, and not, that wasn't always consistent. So, I in a way support her. As much as I hated to see her leave and wish she would have stayed on, I could understand her position and even support it. But for the full story and for more on that, I definitely recommend checking out the video. And they do talk about the game. So if you're not playing Star Trek Online, just bear with it on that. But she does address her time on the Next Generation. There's a lot of good questions, and it's a half hour, so it's a good quick listen. But yeah, now
good lesson in Crosby 101.
Yeah, and if you don't play Star Trek Online, that's a good way to get interested in how she felt bringing back a character after she left the show and left the character, and then expanding on both of the characters, Yar and Sela. So yeah,
like you said, you've got to wonder if her leaving the show didn't spark a level of change of character inclusiveness and turning it into, well, keeping it as more of an ensemble show rather than the sort of Roddenberry formula of, you know, the three main guys and then just these other people. You have to wonder about that. But at the same time, there really could have been more changes made with including the female characters and giving them more to do. But we did get some change. And you really do have to wonder if that's because she left or if they were afraid that the other actresses would leave full time. I mean, we did have Gaze McFadden leave and then come back. And is there a story behind that that you know further about? I honestly am really fuzzy on the details with Gaze McFadden leaving.
There's obviously there would be some layers to it and some, you know, multiple things going on. But basically, the way I, and maybe some in the chat room, maybe Jarrah might know, but the way I've basically heard it and the nutshell version is
that there was Jarrah.
Yep. And so I think basically I think it came down to sexism and the treatment that she was getting from some of the writers, producers.
Yeah,
and so she was, you know, she left, and after the fans were like, you know, an outcry of like, we want her back, and then I think some of the backstage things were being addressed and changed, and so she did come back. But I remember hearing that from, I think, not just Gates. So I mean, it didn't get public at the time, of course, but years later, they'll gingerly kind of touch on things over time and then more out. And so that, you know, there's also a lot of rumors that were being put out there, but I think that's basically what it came down to was she wasn't happy with the treatment that she was getting, and other actors.
I'm sensing a theme here. Yes.
Right. And yeah.
It's another one of those questions where you have to, where we're still not entirely sure whether it was an aspect of her wanting to leave or her kind of being forced out, isn't it? Which is kind of similar to what we've got with the rumors surrounding Denise Crosby leaving, isn't it?
Well, and Jarrah Hodge in the chat room says that she's heard conflicting things. She's heard the sexism thing, and Denise said at Geek Girl Con they were both concerned that Gene's insistence that the show really focus on Picard and Data. They also felt they weren't given interesting things to do, but also heard some more personal things with Gates. So I don't think they're going to give every last detail and go into it.
That's the problem with network TV, isn't it? There are secrets to be kept.
Well,
and
a lot of times they're at a convention, you know, they're there for fun and to, you know, celebrate and to have a good time. And so some of those issues, you know, could be in a way kind of a downer topic, or they just don't have a lot of time to just focus on just that. So we get glimpses of it, and there are reports, posts online, but a lot of times you got to think about, you know, what's the source, where is it coming from?
Yeah, you got to remain skeptical. But at the same time, the world may never know. So again, though, the idea that she left and then ended up coming back, there are some people who think that she came back out of kind of a sour grapes kind of thing, like, well, hey, I left when this thing was, you know, crappy. I deserve to come back when it's good. Do you feel like they were trying to kind of placate her by giving her more to do? Because there are some people who think that Denise Crosby left with a very bitter attitude. What do you think about that? I mean, I feel like that would have been justifiable, but at the same time, it does seem like it's kind of, it's probably an oversimplification, right?
Yeah, that might be an oversimplification. It may also be a slight or somewhat mischaracterizing her intentions. Like, hey, it's cool now. Now I want to come back. Because she says if you like after the show or later tonight, give a listen to that video of her, the Stowe panel. Just go to YouTube, search Legacy of Romulus with Denise Crosby, and it'll pop up the Trek Radio YouTube. And she mentions that the reason that she left, and she didn't go into, you know, every, you know, aspect or layer of it, but she basically said as an actor she wasn't happy with the working environment, that, and not just that she was mistreated as a person, but the way the show was being run, she didn't, you know, feel like she wanted to continue working in that type of way. Then there was some of the other treatment stuff going on, but basically she says that she left because of an issue, or, you know, a problem. Let's just call it that. Maybe that's too much, but she left because of that. After she leaves, that is either fixed or resolved, or lessons gets better. And then, you know, so that's maybe why she would come back, that the environment, the working environment, the way things were run, the, maybe some of the people or the
changed by then, at least some, right?
Yeah. And so I could see that, you know, if it's a better working environment, a better, the concept of how to run the show, you know, when I say working environment, that's kind of like the backstage, is their politics, tensions, different people getting treated, you know, that whole thing. But then also the concept of how do we run the show? Like we've seen, it became more of an ensemble. We see Barkley, we have ancillary characters kind of getting their moment to shine.
Right.
It's not just the captain. So I could see, like, that would be a better environment to work in. And if they are saying, here's some interesting stuff to do, you know, actual, like, good, because a lot of times actors,
that's worth coming back for, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, if it's good acting, good scripts, good stuff to do, then yeah, you would want to come back to that. So I don't think
it's pretty clear that she likes the character and all that, so.
Yeah, and that does tie into also, I mean, we could get into it or in a little bit, but that's also why she was so interested in working on Star Trek Online, that it was coming back to characters that she has a strong connections to, but also wanted to see more of, like, where do their stories go? And she had her own, you know, thoughts in mind about what happened to, how would Yar be, or how would Sela, and so. So yeah, she loved the characters, and to be able to do more with it, and to be, you know, in a way also returning to you know, work with her friends and her, you know, TV family in a way. So I could see it being like, okay, some of the problems or some of the issues are lessened or resolved. So, you know, it would be more comfortable coming back to work in that situation.
All right, and I gotta ask, at what, it was during some point in Next Generation that Gene Roddenberry sort of stopped having control for whatever reason, yeah?
Yeah, there was, it evolved. I mean, obviously, he brought, towards the end, when he started getting more sick, and, you know, his health declined, he brought in Rick Berman, like, so. Some of that might have been a transition, you know, of him.
You kind of have to wonder if him having less control was part of the change, and also part of why she felt like coming back. I mean, as much as I probably shouldn't be playing the devil's advocate here, you got to wonder how much of his presence in controlling the show made it difficult.
Yeah, I could see that. And it's not just that, like, oh, he was a mean man, or he was like a...
No, he was just... It seems like he was a guy who was very set in his ways and very set in the way he thought the formula for the show should go. Right?
Right. Right, exactly. And there's been some of the writers have even talked about that, and it gets addressed in the documentary Trek Nation by Rod Roddenberry, when he goes and talks to, you know, DC Fontana, he talks to Rick Berman, he talks to a lot of the people who worked on it, and even in other documentaries, it was that Gene had a formula, he had an idea, and that he stuck to his guns on those, and that some of the writers were saying, like, please let us do this type of story or that type of
interaction. It was probably a very different experience, you know, working on Gene's show rather than working on, you know, a more composite show with other people getting their input in and what have you.
Right. And so after Gene, you know, his hold on the reins lessened a little bit towards the end of his, you know, his health declining. And then after he passed, the writers did say, okay, you know, we love him, but now it's time that we could try some new things and go in a little bit of different directions.
Right, that there was an opportunity there that they took advantage of.
Right, right.
Taking advantage of is the most sensitive term, but...
Well, and they didn't totally go in a different direction. For a long time, Rick Berman, I don't know how much of a long time, but, you know, there was a time where Gene passed... And Rick Berman was totally the showrunner, and he still upheld Gene's principles and the Gene philosophy of how to do it. And the writers kept going to Berman saying, like, we want to do this, we want to do that. And it gradually was like, okay, you know, let's try it. And so they gradually would add more of, you know, the different direction, but still, you know, trying to make it still be within the Gene Roddenberry, like, vision and realm for the show. They weren't going to go on a totally different, you know, like it's a brand new different show now. But so I could see that too.
Yeah,
that
but at
after
the same time, it feels like the Gene Roddenberry vision from sort of the beginning wasn't really working for the Next Generation as well as it did when they had, you know, when it was more collaborative.
There's two main things that I've heard over time of like what the writers wanted to do that Gene was adamant about not doing. And part of that was Gene didn't want conflict among the characters. And so obviously there's conflict between, like, you know, the Federation and the Klingons and all that type of thing. But in terms of, like, you know, conflict of, because if you go back and look, there was times where Kirk and McCoy would be basically yelling at each other, like, you know, they still loved each other and were, you know, allies and all that, but there was times of internal conflict. And Gene was, you know, saying, these are evolved people. These are people who have, you know, progressed into the future. There's no conflict among the characters. And so a lot of the writers were like, well, conflict is drama. Conflict is interesting. And he's like, nope, no conflict of that realm. The other thing is what we heard briefly in the clip was, because Gene wanted this to be like the, you know, utopia of the future and more evolved, you know, humanity, there was, you know, people, where she mentioned, like, more perfect people, where they did want to have characters have flaws and vices and have, you know, issues, and Gene didn't want that as much. So those are two main things that I remember hearing that the writers wanted to do and then finally got to do, is have conflict, even, you know, with DS9 making the whole thing be at war. But,
well, that's the problem with part of the Gene Roddenberry Star Trek vision of the future. If it was a true utopia, it'd be pretty damn boring, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, and the idea is that maybe the Federation would strive towards a utopian society, but that doesn't mean everybody else in the galaxy would also do that or feel, you know, find the same form of utopia. So that's where conflict would happen, but... So, you know, that was a thing, especially for Tasha Yar, you know, having the internal, you know, duality of being strong but being vulnerable, but then also, you know, some characters having vices or making decisions that might go against principles, but, like, you know, for the greater good. There was just a lot that, you know, happened after Gene that... Gene wouldn't have allowed. So that's probably a layer or an aspect of it. But then there was also, you know,
it's like a new era of Star Trek. Star Trek AG after Gene.
Yeah, because, you know, from what we've heard, Gene probably wouldn't have really liked having the whole Dominion War and a lot of the stuff on DS9 or, you know, some of the stuff that we saw. But, you know, flawed characters are, you know, is interesting. It is for, you know, good stories, good drama, tension, and then they could overcome and deal with it like people do. Like she said, you know, real people aren't perfect and have flaws and internal, you know, contradictions, and that what makes it interesting. And people, even in the future, they're still going to, even though society would get better, you know, like the way they say no poverty, no hunger and all crime and all that, people would still have internal issues and conflicts and stuff. So that
as long as there's free will, there will be conflict. It's kind of a constant, isn't it?
Yeah. And I wouldn't put it all on Gene that, you know, it was that. I think that was a contributing factor, but there it was also, you know, we've heard how some of the actors had different pay levels, you know, and so there's that issue and contract negotiations and treatment of, you know, sexism type issue. I think there was a lot of to it, but I think also, you know, the Gene
formula. And also it's always strange. It always struck me as strange, especially at the risk of sounding blasphemous, in the original series, that there was this idea of sexism is done, but they're still writing it in a way that's pretty sexist. So it's one of those aspects of, if you really want that to come through, you got to practice what you're preaching, and that doesn't always come through, which kind of spoils it for everyone.
Well, and she also mentions how, you know, the idea of the ensemble show versus the show that focuses on two, like X-Files is, you know, Mulder and Scully, like, or Kirk and Spock, like their shows that focus on central characters, and then their shows that or ensemble. So
we've heard over time that Star Trek really does, as a franchise, work as an ensemble to show a level of, you know, diversity and different perspectives in, you know, in this futuristic society that we're looking at.
And that's why I love the DS9. There's so many characters, and some, you know, there's the tiers or the levels of how often we see them or what their function is. But As she said, you know, it was just changing. It was television in the 80s, the late 80s. TNG started in 1987. And so it was like late 80s, early 90s television and society and how society, what they would accept from television, but also the executives running TV at the time. So I think, you know, things changed as time goes on. And so later in the season of TNG, you know, television production styles changed, what the audience, you know, would accept different, more diversity and different types of TV. So I think there's a lot of contributing factors to why she left and why they ran the show they did.
I can't help but wonder if she would have been able to stick with it in a different time frame at a different point in the changeover in television that we had in the late 80s, early 90s, if there was a time when she probably would have been able to stick with it. That's just what I got to wonder.
Yeah, well, and I am happy that she did, you know, didn't come back full-time in a way like Gates did, but I was happy that they brought her back in, and the characters that she, you know, created were, and that's just, in a way, a testament to her as well. I mean, a lot of it, obviously, is the writers, but then the portrayal of it and bringing the characters to life, that she made memorable, you know, scenes and made an impact that people and the audience and the writers were like, let's do more with those characters. Let's see more from her. And so I was happy to see that. And then that they had a continuing life in, you know, the novels, but also in the Star Trek Online, that, you know, there was something to those characters, that there was more to work with, more to do, more to see.
You really got to respect, though, that there was a level, from what we've seen from Denise Crosby, a level of devotion and commitment to her characters, especially Tasha, because she's what we've seen the most of, a level of commitment and a desire to see more from the character, and the need to just back off when the character isn't being given their full potential. And I also respect the fact that, as with any case, if something isn't working for you, sometimes you need to just walk away and try and find greener pastures. I gotta respect that, if it was entirely on her own terms that she left. It was definitely on her terms that she made her return, but yeah, I gotta say I'm kind of on Team Crosby on this one.
Yeah, definitely. If you listen to the full the panel interview, it was her choice to leave, and it is nice to see that an actor cares so much about the characters, but also the craft of acting, that they're not just going to be like the talking monkey that's like, you know, whatever script you put in front of them, they're just going to do it, cash the check, and, you know, that she felt, you know, connected to the characters and wanted to have the work be good and that she could feel proud of and feel connected to the work being done instead of just like, you know, going through the motions just to get the paycheck of it. Because some actors, you know, are, and not to put them in a bad light, but there are working actors that they'll just take the roles and do the acting and move on to the next role. And
same thing goes for just about any job, really.
Yeah. And so it was nice that she took it, you know, more serious, more, you know, connected, more passion to it, that if it wasn't in a right, if it didn't feel right, they're like, I'm out. I can't do this.
Yeah.
And not just, yeah.
So while we're talking about, you know, Denise Crosby's leaving and her return and what have you, let's talk about what she's doing with Star Trek now. Let's talk about her inclusion in Star Trek Online. Now, from the sound of it, the character of Sela was around on Star Trek Online for a while, and then Denise Crosby heard the whispers from the fans that Sela was there and really wanted in because she really enjoyed playing that character from the sound of it. And so it really does sound like she was committed to her characters that she was playing, and she even got to play Tasha Yar again on there. Pretty exciting, right?
Yeah, well, before the game launched, before Star Trek Online launched in, I think it was February 2010, but before they launched that, they made the decision. They're going to move it forward into the future, right? It's 2409.
Which is a pretty good decision, it feels like.
Yeah, it's still close enough that, you know, some characters would still be alive, but far enough
that
they could
advance.
It gives
them some wiggle room also to creatively add their own stuff.
Right, and so it's about, what is it, like 50, 70-something years? You know, it's a big chunk, a good chunk of time after Nemesis, because that was like 2380-something, and now we're 2409. So, but what they did was, to bridge that gap, they created a story, and I think it was mainly Christine Thompson Kestrel that was bridging the gap of what happened. Like, how did we get from what we've seen on the TV shows and the movies to where we're at in the game? And so they created the path to 2409. And they basically took it like year by year and would do the major bullet points of like what happened in like the timeline, like governmental issues, you know, cultural stuff.
They definitely did their homework.
Yeah, so they set up a good story.
You gotta appreciate that.
That bridges it to it. And so Sela played a role in the fiction, in the story of how we got from, you know, Nemesis and to the game. And because, you know, with the Romulan, and then obviously with the JJ movie, the Romulus and Remus being destroyed, they had to factor that in. And so they wrote a good story, and they took the time to, I mean, they took the opportunity to use Sela as a pivotal, you know, influential character. So in the storyline.
And it must be really fun for Denise Crosby to get to be a part of that. And it sounds like she's enjoying it, because as she said it herself at the panel, why be a captain when you can be the Empress?
Exactly. And so
she gets to be like the big baddie of the Romulan expansion pack, and that's gotta be fun, right?
And Legacy of Romulus was the first expansion to the game where it, you know, they've always updated the game with, you know, content updates and game mechanics of, you know, how things function. But Legacy of Romulus was a big push for the game because it added playable Romulans and adding more story for the Romulans, but it was also...
And it is giving us a closer look at the Romulans than we've gotten in a bunch of the past series, isn't it?
Yeah, we're getting a lot more.
Which is really cool!
And it does also deal with, like, the aftermath of, you know, the Hobus supernova destroying Romulus and Remus. What would that do to the culture, to the government?
And it's really interesting seeing this culture that's been pretty much so far portrayed as this big unified culture, seeing them faction off and kind of going to civil war right now. And that just makes it very interesting, and it gives us an even deeper look at the Romulan culture, and both as it was and as it is post-Romulus.
Well, you would have, they factor in and continue the idea that Spock was working with the reunification effort, you know, unifying Vulcans and Romulans, and just the whole Dominion War and all of it going on. There is the side of the segment of Romulans that they just want to be, you know, a peaceful people. They just want to, you know, do their thing. But here comes the remnants of the Romulan star. Well, and the new Romulans that want to be like, you know, peaceful, you know, player in the field of not being at war, that's the Romulan Republic. But there is the remnants of the Romulan Star Empire, which we know as the, you know, the bad guy Romulans from, you know, all the TV shows and movies, which was basically also, you know, the Tal Shiar. That's where Sela comes in. She's basically wanting to, you know, rebuild the Tal Shiar, the Romulan Star Empire. So you have the two different
tricks again, yes.
Right, you know, having the political power, the military, you know, might and influence. So it's a lot of good stuff going on. And so for her, but the legacy of Romulus was the first time we actually get Sela in the game, where before she would be referenced, you know, in not just the path to 2409, but I think there were some missions that referenced Sela, but we never really saw her. And so Legacy of Romulus, diving into the Romulan storyline, we get Sela.
Well, also with the addition of Sela as a character, and recently we got to have an episode with Worf in it. Worf's been added as a character. It really, you can't help but be optimistic about what they're going to be able to do with Star Trek Online in the future, and it just makes me really excited for the possibilities that are available to them.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing that's good and is, like, you know, hopeful and good, optimistic for the players is Sela is still out there. You know, they didn't kill her off, and so they have announced that in the Legacy of Romulus was the first expansion to the game was so popular, so successful, like with the fan embracing it, but also, you know, financially, because it is a business. But it was so popular and successful that they have announced that in 2014 there will be another expansion to the game. They're not really saying what yet, but Sela, you know, that we may see more of Sela. You know, she's
or maybe we'll get to see another side of another culture in Star Trek. Who knows? The possibilities are endless.
Yeah. I mean, the next expansion probably will add another race to the game, maybe playable race, but
I really hope so.
They've done a good job of continuing the storylines, and so even if we do get another expansion, if it's like the Cardassians or who knows what, there is a good chance we may get more, especially because of, you know, the Romulan storyline. Every player, let's say, it's not just that you play a Romulan and you get the Romulan story. It's basically affecting the whole universe, the whole galaxy, and so Federation, you know, the Federation has to help and be affected by what's going on with New Romulus and the Tal Shiar, you know, trying to take over that again and Klingon. So even if we do get another race, I'm sure there will be more Romulan story. And so there's, we may see more Sela. We may see more of, even Michael Dorn. Once they have the rights, once they're connected in, it's easier for them to bring them back than it is for them to initially join the game. So I'd love to see more Sela.
At the rare chance in the rare snowball's chance in hell that anyone from Cryptic is listening, bring in more Dominion. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, maybe a playable Vorta. Maybe some playable Jem Hadar.
This is just descending into me being excited about everything.
Well, and I think, you know, the Dominion War affected a lot of the governments and societies. And in a way, you could almost look at the Cardassians being in a similar boat as the Romulans of, they don't have the Cardassian Union militarily dominated. They have the civilian governments coming up and what's going on with all of that. But
Obsidian Order could make for some really interesting gameplay, couldn't it?
Yeah, no doubt. And so that's the thing, you know, they're doing good stories with Star Trek Online, and they do want to bring in more and more actors. the ones that they have so far are doing great work, and you know, advancing characters that you know are fan favorites. That you know, it's not just it'd be cool to get Shatner. You know, it's like, well, what story are you gonna do? So it's cool characters, good actors, but it's definitely driving good stories. And that's something, is it, you know, like going back again, that's a testament to the writers, but also to the actor, that, you know, they give in their performance, they add so much to it that the writers and the fans just want more of that character. And then there's, you know, so much going on that they could just continue the characters.
Which makes Denise Crosby such a welcome addition to Star Trek Online.
And it was also like, you know, when we follow Stowe and the different conventions, and it was just clear that she was very enthusiastic. It wasn't like, you know, having to twist her arm.
She looked so psyched for that. And that's another part of why it's so great to have her back. It's great to see her involved with characters that she's enthusiastic about. And it's it feels cathartic to have her be able to get enthusiastic when she had to walk away from it earlier, which I think is a good note to wrap this up on. It's been a great time talking with y'all. David, you feel like we're good to go?
Yep. I definitely, you know, we could end up talking all day about, you know, the characters that we love, because we didn't even touch on how Denise Crosby was part of the two awesome fun documentaries, Trekkies and Trekkies 2. So
I know. Even though she left the series, she's still been a pretty active part of the Star Trek community. And hopefully that can be a talking point for our listeners, or at least a, you know, sit and think about point for them, for our more introspective listeners. But anyway, it's been a great couple of hours, and we're glad we had y'all listening.